is Grant Smith. I'm with Pneumatic Scale Angelus. I'm a field service technician. I've been with the company for about 3 years. I've been working in craft beer for about 20 years. I have done about every job in the industry. My last job before working for Pneumatic Scale Angelus was working for Ecliptic Brewing Company in Portland, Oregon, where I live. I was the packaging manager there. We did like 26,000 barrels a year. And I've done brewery maintenance. I've been a brewer. I've done sales, bartending, done just about everything. But packaging is really, really what I like. It has a good mix of science and getting your hands dirty and practical thinking and problem solving and boredom. So that's the thing that you're always working towards. This is going to be a relatively short presentation, about 35 minutes. So there's a lot of time for questions. At the end of the presentation, I'm going to tear down a can. If anybody wants to learn how to tear down a can manually with just some nippers, I have a can here. We'll do it there, and then we can go back to the to our booth. We have beer there. You can have a beer, and we'll tear down your can and teach you about stuff and get you some practical experience. So today we are going to talk about overlap, which I'm calling the most critical measurement. We are going to dive deep into can seams. In order to do this, we need to agree on some definitions on seam components. We're going to talk about what overlap is and why it's important. We're going to talk about what the risks are of having a weak overlap and poor seam quality. We're going to talk about seam formation, do a brief overview of that. We're going to talk about seam specifications and where they come from. We're going to talk about how overlap is actually measured. And we're going to talk about how to manipulate the different components of the seam to bring your overlap back into spec and bring other parts of your seam back into spec. And most importantly, we're going to talk about what this means to you and the quality of your product. So, start with the parts of the seam. Seams are broken down into two separate parts. You have external components and you have internal components. The external components, you have the seam thickness. If anybody has ever spent time on a canning line and watched somebody pick a can up and measure the thickness of the seam, they pull the micrometer on it, they're measuring the seam thickness. It's the width of the seam. You can also measure the height of the seam. That's from the can body to the top of the can end. And then there's the countersink. The countersink is where the chuck sits inside of the can lid. And when you are forming your seam, your deflection is going to come from there as well. The internal components of the seam, you have your body hook. Body hook comes from the can body. It has a flange on it. And in the seam formation, it bends over, and that makes your body hook. Cover hook is can cover or the can lid, can end. When it curls around that flange, that forms your cover hook. And where those two intersect is your overlap. And that is the crux of this presentation. So, seam formation. The way that a seam is formed is you have a can end, goes onto some sort of lifter. It can be a pneumatic lifter, it can be a driven lifter, whatever. It goes on some sort of lifter. And it raises both of those up against a chuck. Chuck spins the can around really fast, and you have two rollers that come in called operations that form your seam. The first operation is the first roller that comes in, and that does 90% of the work. That is the most important part of your seam. When we get into the troubleshooting a little bit later, you will see how often first operation comes up. When you're running into seam issues, if you have one of our machines or you have somebody else's machine, you call a tech and you're running into seam issues, one of the first questions they should ask you is what's your first operation look like? So very, very important thing to know. So the first roller comes in and it forms, starts to form the operation, the first part of the seam. And it's going to wrap the cover hook around the flange on the can and it's going to start to bend it. In this illustration here, the blue is the can lid, the green is the can body, and that yellow is compound. That compound is your primary seal. So name of the game is making sure that you have a seam that's tight enough that primary compound can actually seal the can and nothing can get out and you get a hermetic seal. So as this first operation is, roll is being formed there, you can see that we're making the curl, and you can also see, very importantly, it's illustrated better in this one than the next slide, that you don't have a cover hook that is jammed into the body of the can, and you don't have a body hook that's jammed into the curl of the cover. Those are very, very important things. Then finally, after the first operation's done, the second operation comes in, and it just flattens everything out. That is the whole purpose of it. A good second operation cannot fix a bad first operation. So that's very, very important to remember. And a nice little illustration of this. So you got can, end is applied, goes up on the chuck. First operation roll comes in. And you can see it starts to make those curls. And then the second operation just comes in and just flattens everything out. A can comes off the chuck, gets it or exits the canning line, and Bob's your uncle. So what is overlap? Overlap is, as I mentioned, is where the cover hook and the body hook intersect. And it's very, very important because it involves almost every part of the seam. Actually, I think it does involve every part of the seam. If your overlap is too short, the sealing compound won't fill the gaps, and liquid can escape. If liquid can't escape, that means gas can escape, and that's very, very bad. We'll talk about why later. If your overlap is too long, you can compromise the compound. I've seen some places where that's debated, but I like to play it safe and not compromise my primary seal. So what happens if your overlap is bad? First of all, you get leaking seams. Have you guys ever had issues with leaking seams at your breweries? Have you guys ever, this is probably a good reason to keep very good records of what you're doing and of your seam checks. Because if you are running one day and the person on the back of your line says, we got a leaker here. And then you start looking and you notice that you have a lot of leakers. And then you look that you have not checked seams in 2 weeks. So you don't know when that leak started. So then you have to go back through all of your inventory. And you have to start tearing apart pallets and tearing apart cases of cans, looking for leaking seams. That is a waste of time. And that sucks. So it's really important to do that. Because the inside of your can has a liner. The outside of your can does not have a liner. Beer has a low pH. It will eat through the can. If you eat through the outside of the can, then it's going to cause a bigger leak, which is going to get the cans next to it. Say that's at the top of the pallet or the middle of the pallet, then it's going to start trickling down to everything below it and everything around it, and you're going to destroy a whole pallet of cans really quickly. That is not good. You want to avoid that. On top of that, when you have a leaking seam, then you lose carbonation. You also lose structural stability of the can because you no longer have that outward gas. And then once all that gas escapes, then that allows oxygen to come in, and that's going to spoil your product. It's also going to allow bacteria to come in, and also possibly botulism. So then you can maybe kill somebody if they're very negligent. So you really want to make sure that you're keeping track of your seams. And in that scenario that I mentioned earlier, where you have wasted pallets of cans, you've gone through and you maybe take your entire brewery and you start going through your last 2 weeks of production and you're tearing apart pallets, looking at cans. That's a lot of wasted time. That's a lot of wasted person hours. You guys could be doing other things. You've wasted all of that product that's in those cans. It's all gone. You've wasted the can itself. You've wasted the end. You wasted the time that it took to put that stuff together. You've wasted all the ingredients that went into making that product. And all of that's money. And if some of that stuff got out of the, enough of that got out of the market, and you got to do a recall, then you all of a sudden damaged your brand to the customer. You've damaged your brand to the store that's carrying your beer. You've lost face with your distributor. And you've just wasted a whole bunch of time and money. And that's definitely not good. So if you take nothing else away from this presentation, keep up on your seam checks. It's real important. This is possibly the most boring slide in this whole presentation in terms of visual, but it is also the most important. These are your seam specifications. Seam specifications come from your can end manufacturer. They do not come from the people who make your cans. They do not come from your broker. They come from the manufacturer of your can end. If you are going through a third party to get your can ends, and they're just kind of going by whatever is the most affordable, you know, and whatever, that's fine. If you run B64 ends or Super ends or CDLs or whatever, you can run a Ball CDL and then a Crown CDL and MCC or whoever. But you also have to know that each of those manufacturers have different specifications for those seams. So you can run whatever you want, but you need to be aware. It's incumbent upon you to be aware of what you're using and to set your seamer up for those can ends. Make sense? All right, let's go over these seam specifications. We're going to use the one on the left. It's a Ball seam spec sheet. So you can see here we have machine setup specifications. You can see at the top there a little bit there where it says, second operation S147 or S141 or whatever. That's talking about roll profiles and just telling you these are what we use to set these specifications. Those are the equipment that we use. So just below that, we've got pin height. Pin height is very important. That's if you call me and ask me for what's, I'm having seam issues, that's probably the first question I'm actually going to ask you is, what's your pin height? Because this is the thing that's most likely to change. Run 12-ounce cans at the beginning of the day, you run 16-ounce cans at the end of the day, you maybe finish off with 19.2s, and the next day you go back to 12s. So you've just changed the height of your seamer three times. And the pin height is the distance between the lifter when it's up and the bottom of the chuck. And if that's a little bit too high, then that's just the same as having like weak spring pressure. If it's too low, it's like having too high of spring pressure, and you can have that affects your body hook. So those are all things to keep in mind. So pin height here, you see on the left, you have your can size. These are all mostly standard body cans, except for the bottom where you have some sleeks. So 202 by 211 is considered a standard body can. 202 by 211 by 413 is a 12-ounce can, standard 12-ounce can, and the pin height for that is 4.5 inches. So if you're setting your pin height on a machine where you can set your pin height, because there's some where they just have where that's all just preset for you, then you're going to take your pin height gauge, you're going to put it in there, you're going to put a razor lifter, and you should be able to feel the pin height gauge move just a little bit. It needs to be tight, but it doesn't need to be super clamped, because like you said, again, that's like having your spring pressure too high and making your body hook too long. So those are just all things to keep in mind. Also, if you're setting your pin height and you have a machine where you set your seamer height manually, you always want to make sure that you go down and when you set it, I'm coming back up. So you want to make sure that you're engaging the bottom side of the thread that's driving your seamer up. So you're just taking all the slack out of the system. That's what you want to do. Below that, you see cold fill, hot fill, 100 cold fill, 100 pounds plus or minus 5 pounds, and hot fill, 130 pounds plus or minus 20 pounds. That is spring pressure. So that's telling you right there for these cans and these ends, this is the recommended spring pressure. Every machine has something that is driving the spring pressure. Whether it's pneumatic, whether it's mechanical, whether it's driven, you have something that's creating the spring pressure. At our shop for our small lines, we typically set that at like 95 PSI when it's coming out of our shop, or 95 pounds when it's coming out of our shop. But for our high speed stuff, that's usually, around 100, 110, give or take. So, just things to keep in mind. If you don't have a spring pressure gauge, it's expensive, but it's a worthwhile thing to have. Below that, we have our actual seam specs. We have first operation seam thickness and countersink, second operation seam thickness, second operation countersink, your body hook, cover hook, tightness rating, actual overlap has all of those things there. There's a few more things I want to call out about this. First of all, if you notice for a couple of these, that one didn't quite translate as well. It's supposed to be highlighting the two lines for second operation seam thickness and for seam height. So those two different things for second operation seam thickness, those are two different numbers based on the thickness of the cannon that you're using. So that's another thing just to be aware of. A lot of times for beer, that's the 85-gauge can thickness. It's lower carbonation, doesn't have to withstand quite as much pressure. The higher gauge is for, like, you know, sodas and seltzers and stuff like that has higher carbonation. So just things to keep in mind. The specifications are pretty close, but they are different. So the other one is seam height. See two different numbers for there. And the things beside it, as I mentioned earlier, S141 and S147, those are different roll profiles. So just being aware of what you have and then using that to set your measurements. Because once again, those seam specifications are pretty close. They're within a thousandth of an inch or two, but they are different. So just something to be aware of. And next, you have setup specifications and operating specifications. Those highlights are supposed to go over those words. The setup specifications, these are for when you are setting up your machine, one can at a time, machine is cold, these are the numbers that you're going for. Operating specifications, on high-speed seamers, those machines need to be set when the machine is warm. So you have to run the machine for like an hour, and these are the specifications that we're shooting for those. So we're going to kind of go over these components now, and there's one more thing, important thing I'm going to say on this one. When we are calculating our overlap, we're going to use almost all of those specifications. We're going to use our seam height. We're going to use our body hook. We're going to use our cover hook, and that's going to help us get our overlap. You can see here I've just kind of detailed those specific measurements for seam height. You know, for setup, 96 to 100 thousandths. So 98 plus or minus 2. And for the operating, it's plus or minus 3. So you get a little bit more wiggle room when the machine's running. Body hook, plus or minus 5. And then operating specifications, plus or minus 10 thousandths. Cover hook, plus or minus 5. Or when you're running, just a minimum of 53 thousandths. And then finally, overlap, you see where it says setup, 35 thousandths, and operating, 25. If you have a overlap of 25 thousandths of an inch, you need to stop what you're doing immediately and fix your machine. I do not know a single person in this industry who thinks that, or who does what I do, who thinks that 25 thousandths is an adequate overlap. If you are at 25 thousandths, you are at a very high risk of having a leaking seam. So don't do that. If you get the occasional can, it's like 33 or something like that, that's not a big deal. But start seeing it frequently, then you may want to fix it. But otherwise, a minimum of 35. So measuring overlap. We use these tools right here. These are easy ways to do it. You know, just while you're standing on the line watching cars or watching cans go by, you know, just having a pair of diagonal cutters or side cuts or close cuts or nippers or whatever you want to call them in your pocket and your micrometer that every can line manufacturer should be giving out. You can measure all of that with this. You can totally manually tear down a seam. That's what I'm drinking, the Spindrift. Measuring our overlap. There is a real simple equation for this. It is cover hook plus body hook plus 1/10 of an inch deflection minus your seam height. That number will give you your overlap. We'll pause here for a second since people are taking pictures. And we'll go over this a little bit more. So, does everybody in this room know how to use a micrometer? Anybody who doesn't? Well, I'm going to tell you anyway. measuring, we're going to start with seam height. Because if we're going to tear down a can to measure the overlap and measure internal components, we're going to destroy the external components. So let's start with our seam height. So you can see here, measuring the top of the can, turned it sideways, and just kind of clamp the top there. And you can see on this micrometer, you have horizontal hash marks and horizontal hash marks and you have vertical hash marks. The vertical hash marks are 25 thousandths of an inch increments, and the horizontal ones are 1/1000. So You see here we have three vertical, that's 75 thousandths, plus 24 horizontal ones, that gives us 99 thousandths. Make sense? Yeah. So now I've stripped the can, and I have pulled the cover hook off there, and you can see really clearly right here, that's your cover hook. So we pulled it off of the can, and you can see it's pretty damaged, or it's not very damaged there. The benefit of using side cutters to do this versus a can opener or something like that is that I have something to grab onto with this. If you are using a can opener to measure or to tear apart your seams and tear them down, usually cuts all of this off, but it doesn't cut it off cleanly with this. So it's really hard to get just this. And you may have another thousandth or two of material on here, and that could be put you on the borderline one way or the other. But that's just the benefit of using a side cutter to manually tear down versus using a can opener just to cut off the top. Can opener is quicker, for sure. Less risk of cutting yourself, but it's still there. That's still the benefit of it. So as you can see, measured it here, and can't really see what the notation is there, but it is 64 thousandths of an inch. So we were in spec there. The height was 98 thousandths, plus or minus two. We were at 99, 64 for cover hook. I think 65 was the middle of the spec. Body hook, you see here I've pulled the end off. That is the curled over body hook right there. You have total access to that. And that puts us at 63 thousandths. So our whole overlap equation here, we have 64 thousandths for our cover hook. We have body hook at 63. We've added 10 thousandths of an inch to flexion. So that gives us 137 thousandths. Then we subtract our seam height, 99. That brings us down to an overlap of 38. Great, we're in spec. Awesome. So what happens if you're not in spec? All it takes for being out of spec is for one of those seam components to be off. So getting it back in, you can see here, your cover hook's out of spec. The first thing to check is your first operation. Maybe it's too tight. All of these come from they are listed in order from a troubleshooting guide that we put in on all of our manuals that lists order of likelihood. So, I'm happy to share those with you digitally after this if anybody would like one. So that's where these are all going to come from, and then also experience. So if your cover hook's out of spec, first operation could be too tight. Your first operation roll could be set a little bit too low to the chuck. Starting point for those for almost every end is 3,000ths of an inch above the lip of the chuck for your roll height for first operation and 5,000 for second operation. And I think the other thing to mention here is that these are all starting points. What we recommend to set stuff at is a starting point. The end goal is having a seam that is good and having adequate overlap and being mostly in spec with everything. You could also have a damaged or worn chuck. That's part of inspecting your machine every day. Before you start up, you should be checking your bolts. You should be making sure that your rolls aren't damaged, your chucks aren't damaged, and doing your seam checks before you get going. If your cover hook is too short, first operation could be too loose. That makes sense. Your second operation could also be too loose. You could have a worn profile for your first operation or worn bearings. And if you get a lot of variation when you're doing your measurements, it could be an uneven curl or flange, or you could have a first op that's too tight. So these are all pretty simple things when you think about it, because all you're thinking about is bending metal and squishing it and how it's going to grow and how it's going to form. So body hook. I said earlier, this is 100% related to spring pressure. That is your most likely culprit for having a body hook that's too long or too short. Your spring pressure is either going to be too high or too low. That's the first thing that I always go to. And you can manipulate this really easily by doing that, by adjusting your spring pressure. Also, your pin height, if it's too high or too low, that can mimic the cause of having, or mimic having high or low spring pressure. So those are easy things to look at and think about. If your body hook is too long, you could also have your second operation is too tight. You could have a loose first operation. If it's too short, first operation could be too tight. First operation roll could be too high, or the second operation roll could be too high. And then finally, the seam height. And this is kind of the easiest one to think about when you think about the second operation being too high or too tight. If you have two things and you're squeezing them together, they can't go out. They can only grow vertically. If you're not squeezing it enough, it's not going to grow vertically, right? So that's just a good thing to think, good way to think about it, because you're just thinking about manipulating folds of metal. So if your seam height is too tight or too long, your second operation could be too tight. You're squeezing it too much, it's growing too much. Your first operation could be too loose, so that means there's too much space when you're making those initial curls in your first operation. Or your bearings or rolls could be worn, so make sure you're taking a look at those. If it's too short, the first operation could be too tight, so everything's kind of folded in too much when you're doing your first operation. You could be butted up against the side, butted up against the cover hook and body hook. You could also have a second operation that's too loose, so you're not squeezing it enough. Your roll profiles could be off, or you could have weak spring pressure. So in a nutshell, that is overlap and the dangers of having a weak overlap. If anyone has questions, you get a free hat. Does anybody have any questions? Yes, sir.
Oh yeah, I know.
For yeah, absolutely. You at minimum first operation checks. And then also, like I said, the first thing that anybody who's going to if you're going to call me and have that you're having issues with your seams, almost 100% of the time I'm going to ask you what your first op looks like. And then depending upon what else is going on, then we can dive in further for sure. I'm going to pick up a hat. Yeah, pick out which one you want. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions? Yeah.
I've noticed a lot lately just with the competitive market and different companies, we've been just trying out a lot of different cans in general and different lids.
Mm-hmm.
Pricing right now with one top.
Mm-hmm.
Doing. You know, there's a lot that our seams have been changing and getting out of spec because obviously the variation of the can width and the dimension of the can just being like that 0.002 difference.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely, 100%. There are a lot of times, and so there are things that are happening out there where people are trying to cut costs, so cans are getting thinner. Yeah, and then you can also see, I've seen a lot where there's less care in the manufacture of the ends and the difference. So, like, there's a slide I have early on where I talk about seam specifications, and it's like the seam view right there. You can see the can end and the can body pretty much the same width. I almost never see that anymore. Almost every single time now, the can end is maybe a third thicker, maybe even two-thirds thicker than the can body. And it is, it can be almost impossible to get it into whatever the manufacturer specs are. And the other thing to remember is that the can end manufacturers and the can manufacturers very rarely talk to the folks who make seamers. And they don't. And when they're setting those specifications, they may use Angelus rolls to set that, but they're not saying, "Hey guys, we're thinking about changing some of our manufacturing processes. Are these going to still be possible to do that?" They very rarely consult us on that. So that's a thing to keep in mind. And then if you're using like Super Ends or CDLs or something like that, those are very thin and very light and they can be just a real, real pain to get into spec. you can have issues with getting your cover hook right or your seam thickness within spec, you know, give or take. And yeah, there's several places I've been to recently, brand new machines, brand new rolls, and you know, on our rolls we have this thing called reminder flange that prevents the roll from getting too close to the chuck and damaging the chuck. And that's kind of as far as you in as you can get it if you have your reminder flange touching the chuck. And I've had the reminder flange touching the chuck. So it's in as far as I can get it. And I still can't get my seam thickness below 47 thousandths of an inch. You know, I can't squeeze it anymore. Then I look at what I visually look at the seam is. And that's when I rely on, it's like, okay, well, what's the overlap look like? Because if you can't, I mean, if the can end is twice as thick as the can body, and then you fold that over a few times, you can't do anything with it. So that's when you say, okay, well, my body hook's in spec, my cover hook's in spec, my overlap is good, I can't get tighter. You know, I might even back it off a little bit that way, or just so that I keep the reminder flange off of the chuck and help protect the chuck a little bit longer. Because if you're riding every time that second operation roll comes up against the chuck, you know, it's going to, you run the risk of damaging your chuck more. So I will do that. I might manipulate first operation a little bit more to see if I can do something with it. But a lot of times if everything else is in spec and my overlap is good, that's what I'm going to do. Because there's only so much you can do. They're not, the can manufacturers are not consulting me about any of this. And that's just how it goes. So, but you can have a seam that's wider than spec. Because I said, these are all starting places. 45 thousandths of an inch plus or minus 2 thousandths of an inch is a starting place. You know, it's not, if you're at 48 thousandths of an inch, that doesn't mean you're going to have a leaking seam. Especially if, like, your overlap is good, you can see the compounds moving in there, and, like, when you physically take things apart and you look at it, and especially if you have, like, seam view software or something like that, and you can see it, like, that's a good-looking seam right there. You know? If it meets all the other requirements and it's just wide, sometimes you just can't squeeze it anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And dealing with that now, I've got six pallets of cans like that, and a whole pallet of ends like that. It's like, I'm just at this point, I'm kind of making my own new spec. Because in fact, I have nothing adjusted.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing. And I will say that the more that you are outside of that width spec, right, for second operation, if you're outside of any spec, that's more reason to check your stuff more frequently, right? So if you're checking it more frequently and everything else is in spec, you're not getting any leaker cans, it's probably good, in all honesty. So I wouldn't, if you've done as much as you can, there's only so much you can do. So there's a good chance that what you have is good. There are also some manufacturers of canning lines whose seamers tend to drift more than others. So it's just more important to be able to know what you're working with and feel comfortable on working on that seamer and adjusting it and bringing it back into spec, because it's super expensive to call a tech in every single time. And depending upon who you have for your can line manufacturer, it could cost money to even call the tech for phone advice. So being able to work on that stuff yourself is very important. And knowing, feeling empowered to do so is important. And then being able to bring your seams back into spec, or as close as is into spec as you can, it's very important. Yes?
How worried are you with the speed at which Auto Horn is coming in? We had to do a full seamer rebuild the past year, and our tech recommended it's slowing down on the one, but it's slowed down on our production equipment.
I mean, it can come in as fast as it needs to come in, as long as you're not overlapping the first and second operation coming in at the same time. There needs to be, op one needs to be on its way out and not making contact with the can as op two is coming in. So you can be as fast as that. I mean, we make machines that seam cans at 1,800 cans a minute, 2,000 cans a minute, and those are all moving real, real fast. And they're like 18 spindles, so they're really big. There's a lot of seamers going at once, 18, 20 spindles or whatever, but they're all moving real fast. Like, you see them go there, you know. So, it's as long as you're not interfering with Op 2, with Op 1 coming in or out, and you have enough time for Op 1 to make all its revolutions, then you're good. I think it's usually like 5 or 6, 7 revolutions, something like that. Does anybody else have any questions? It's super important. It's super beneficial. I am a firm believer, as somebody who's gone through recalls in the past, of covering your ass. CYA is super important. And having seam inspection software really allows you to do that, because you can have a record. You can say, and if you're doing, the more frequent seam checks you have, the more of a detailed record you have. So if something does happen to your seamer over the course of a day, you can go say, well, our noon seam check was good, and then we started seeing leaker cans at like 2 or 3 in the afternoon. Okay, cool. So just the last two pallets, right? We're good. We can just inspect those, stop production, inspect those pallets, pull out the leaking cans, fix our machine, and get on with our lives, or the last pallet or whatever production you did for that last 2 hours. So being able to have that to go back and look at. And then also it helps keep you honest, because you get a good visual of what your seam looks like. And the more you look at it, like, I can look, if that inspection didn't, or if that view right there didn't have any measurements on it at all, I could tell you it's a good seam. And you'll get to the point where you can look at a seam and be like, oh, no, that's good. Or, oh, that looks bad. And then start looking at the actual measurements and figure out what you have to do to fix. But you can look at it and be like, oh, no, that's good or that's bad pretty quickly. And I know that this is not a commercial for SeamView or anything like that or whatever, but they've got some really good portable stuff that doesn't give you measurements, so it gives you at least that, like portable seam saws and scopes where you can like look at it and go, that looks bad or that looks good or whatever. And I highly recommend it, because having that record is huge. Yes?
No leaks.
Leaks are bad. If you do have leaking seams, then you want to make sure that you are, you're going back and you're doing your inspections and seeing what it looks like. Now, I've seen this in the past too. I've seen seams that are entirely in spec. Every single thing is in spec, but the cans are still leaking because someone was sitting on a pallet of can ends for 2-3 years. And then they try to use them because, they got a good deal, right? Because they were close to expiration. That compound, that primary seal, and that's in a can end, has an expiration date. Do not use cannons that are manufactured or that are past their expiration date, because that compound could be compromised. And once again, you know, it takes as little as 40 parts per billion of oxygen to exacerbate diacetyl. And that's going to lose you a beer competition, right? And it's also for those people who can taste diacetyl, that's going to turn a lot of people off of your brand, you know, if you're aware of it. There's a lot of people who don't know what it is or are blind to it, so it's not necessarily as big of a deal. But those are still things to consider. But I've definitely seen leaking cans where everything's in spec and it's just that compound has been bad. Or the compound has been spottily applied. And you can physically have somebody look at the ends and you go, oh yeah, there's actually a lot of places where there's no coverage on that. So I've definitely seen that in the past.